Hello, friends, and welcome back to the second hour of Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting live from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle, Washington, here in the United States. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and much happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this planet a better place. Today's show, the second hour, will be really special because I'll be interviewing Betsy Poole, who's the founder and head of the Institute for the Mythology of Humanity and the transmedia producer for the Domenhura Spiritual Echo Community in Italy. Their website for more information is www.damanhur.org. It's nestled in the Alpine foothills north of Piedmont, Italy, between Turin and Ascoca. Domenhura is a truly magical place on Earth. It's in the 15-kilometer area with a very active multilingual community of about 600 people. It's been recognized in 2005. It was recognized by the United Nations as a model for a sustainable society. One of the most interesting things about Domenhura is that they have leaders are chosen by their spiritual qualities, not necessarily on how many popular votes they can get. So, which is very interesting because one of the predictions that Nostradamus has made is that leaders in the future, both in the United States and around the world, in the future will be chosen by their spiritual qualities and not necessarily how many, not by their ability to get votes, but rather on a consensus. And I think that's just a fascinating idea. So Domenhura is an example of a community that actually does that. It's a federation of spiritual communities with its own constitution, and I think you'll find it really interesting. With that, I'd like to go ahead and play that interview with Betsy Poole. So we'll go to that now. Please stay tuned. Hello, friends. I'm in Benda di Luca, Italy, a beautiful resort town in the northern mountains of northern Italy, with a wonderful lady named Betsy Poole. She's lives in a community called Domenhura, which is an idyllic community in northern Italy, about 4 hours from here. And Betsy, welcome to Out of This World Radio.
Thanks, Ted. It's lovely to be here. Thank you for offering us this opportunity to chat.
That's great. That's great. Well, tell me a little bit about your background and how did you ever end up in this little community in Italy, of all places? You sound like you have an American accent. Are you from the States?
Indeed, I am from the States. I do have an American accent. My background gave no indication that I would, at the midpoint of my life, end up in an intentional community in Italy. For many years, I was a Broadway lighting designer. I was the American designer of a show called Les Miserables. From there, I worked in television, and then I worked in film. So we, in fact, moved to Domenhura from Los Angeles. So from a very material world, you know, big house, swimming pool, you know, the L.A. life. And our life looks very different now.
Hmm. One of the things you told me is that, according to the United Nations, your community is a model for the future. Is that right?
Domenhura is really a laboratory for research. And when we say laboratory for research, we're speaking about both social, spiritual, and environmental research. And an agency of the United Nations has said that Domenhura is a model for the future of humanity. We take that responsibility very seriously in our community.
Well, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. How many people live there?
There are approximately 600 citizens in the community. We're not a campus community. We're really spread out over an entire river valley. So the two furthest points in Domenhura are about 50 kilometers away from each other. And there are actually many thousands of people worldwide that are in some way connected to the community through a program that we call the Spiritual People. So there are people who each day will create a connection with the community. But locally, we're about 600.
Hmm. Now, tell me, what is different from your community versus, let's say, Los Angeles?
Oh, gosh. Well, there's similarities. We're all human there.
That's good.
Beyond that, we really live a very different style of life. We often speak about sustainability. But again, for us, sustainability is not just about environmental sustainability, but about social and spiritual sustainability as well. So in our community, we actually live communally. So we're of the 600 people, we have 29 structures that we call nucleos. And nucleos are big homes that have been purposefully structured to support numerous people living together. And so we don't live just with our biological families, but we also live with others who share a sense of mission. And each of our nucleos has its own particular mission.
That's fascinating. And I take it that the society, your society itself, is based on cooperation rather than competition, and harmony rather than disharmony.
Well, we could simplistically say that, but in fact, we also foster healthy competition. Competition in a sense of, I can tell you a story. When Dominor was first forming, and it were 40 years ago, so Dominor is a 40-year-old community. This is not a new social experiment. But the founder of the community actually took a small group of Dominorians on what we call viaggio. And so they went on a travel all over Italy. They were gone for a couple of months. And on that viaggio, a number of other people became attracted to this idea of living in community and came back to Dominor with the small group. Well, you know, I think this was around 12 years old at this point. So the group who had formed this project were very comfortable in what they had created and thought that they had created the ultimate project. And then in come this group of interlopers now, you know, this new group of Dominorians to be. And that integration was not very, very fast or easy. And so the founder of the community actually staged a mock battle between the old and the young. And it was done in the spirit of play. And we know from neurology that humans tend to process change through the pain centers. But when change is processed through the part of the brain that processes play, then we're more able to integrate change in a healthy and harmonious way.
And I assume, I take it that if someone slips on a banana peel on a sidewalk in Dhammapur, that they don't sue them. Is that correct?
We're certainly not a litigious society, although we are in Italy, so we do end up signing our name to a lot of documents. But no, we're not. There's really a sense of responsibility for both ourselves and the others around us.
Well, let's say this, in a typical household, let's say a family, a man and woman have children. Do they share that with other families within the same structure, or do they have their own separate structure?
So I'll give the example of our family. I live with my husband and our 14-year-old daughter, and we live in what we call a nucleo. So we live with, in our house, there are 20 adults and two teenagers. These are not biological relatives, but these are also not close friends necessarily. It's not that we're a group of close friends who decided to live together. But we're a group, we often say in Dominor, one of the quickest ways for spiritual growth is to live with others. Because when we live with others, we see ourselves mirrored, both in our most positive aspects, but also in those things that are, you know, perhaps the areas that we need to work on. So, I think it's very easy to feel yourself a spiritual person and live in a glass house. But what happens when people start throwing stones at the windows? You know, it's really, I think the proof is in, we always say it's very easy to agree on ideology. But when you come home and you put a yogurt in the refrigerator in the evening with the hope of having that for breakfast, and you live with 20 people, when you come down the next morning, that yogurt is not likely to be there. So how do you react to that? So it's really in the day-to-day habitual behaviors where we come into contact with others that growth takes on.
Okay. Well, I have lots of questions to ask. Let's say, for example, how do you economically survive? Do you grow, is it agriculturally based? Do you grow crops for sale in the outside world? Or how do you do for your food source? Is it all organic?
Yes, and within the community, there are a percentage of the people who work outside of the community in regular careers, regular jobs. Many people travel internationally in terms of their work. And then there's a percentage of the people within the community who actually work for the community, so, you know, work in our various departments. There are many businesses that are, they wouldn't be Dominorian businesses. They would be individual businesses that are within Dominor. So cooperatives, collectives that have created enterprises within the community. And then we have a percentage of people who work in agriculture. So we're about 65% self-sustained in terms of our food production and about 85% self-sustained in terms of our energy production.
And I assume you don't use any genetically modified crops from Monsanto.
Actually, when you drive into our town, not just our community, but into the village that I live in, there's a sign when you come in that says, Vidraco is anti-transgenico, which is the Italian for there's no genetically modified material being used. And we also, we have laboratories in Dominor where we'll test any outside food to understand if there's been genetic modification. So, no, we're definitely always enjoying organic and, you know, mostly our own, especially meat. We have our own farm, our own centralized agriculture where that those products are being produced.
Now, Betsy, I have an interesting question to ask you that's probably crossed the minds of many of my listeners around the world. But I live in a large metropolitan area, the Seattle area in the United States on the West Coast. There's 3.1 million people in the Seattle-Puget Sound area. How, for example, could the lessons learned from your living in Dominor be applied to the Seattle metropolitan area to make it a more livable place, or any city for that matter on the planet?
You know, I think there's a lot of research going on right now. And also, I'm not sure if you're aware, but there's the Transition Town Movement. And the Transition Town Movement is a movement that's looking at how to create sustainability within the context of urban areas. One of the things that I always say when I'm asked this question is, we each day have a series of habitual behaviors that we, on a day-to-day basis, take on. And I believe that when we begin to look at our habitual behaviors and are open to modifying those, we always say that invites synchronicity in. So that begins to create change in someone's life. So that can be as simple as, I always take the same route to work every day. I walk in this direction. I walk in this direction. Okay, I'm going to today modify that behavior. I'm going to walk a different street. And you run into someone there who in some way has an impact in your life. So, you know, it's, again, the etiology is one thing. It's the habitual behaviors that are where we need to create the change that can help us shift humanity.
Well, I'll ask you a question I'm sure on the minds of many people in Seattle is that the traffic in Seattle can be just horrendous sometimes. And people have been looking for other answers. We have a wonderful rail system that now is being constructed in the area, and I applaud their efforts. I think it's going to really help with the congestion. But as far as transportation goes in your community, how do people get around? Do they use the automobile, or do they walk, or do they bicycle? What kinds of transportation modes do they use?
Well, I think probably the most remarkable or unusual that we have what we call synchronic rides. So we have areas that are posted within the community where if you're standing in that area, you're looking for a synchronic ride. We all know one another, so it's not the equivalent of hitchhiking in a city where you might be in danger. But we will often ride share in that way. We're not a campus, so the distances are quite far.
How far?
50 kilometers. So the two furthest points are 50 kilometers.
30 miles.
Exactly. So there are many people who have bicycles who live, you know, more centrally, but we do still use cars and work to share. I'd love to point out an example, though, of a community in the United States, in Virginia, called Twin Oaks. And, you know, we're so habituated to, if we're a family of four with two adults, we have two cars. They're a community that they have a group of cars that are shared by around 100 people. So they might have, 10 or 15 cars that that are shared by that group of people. So, you know, it's really getting away from the individualistic ownership model and into the, you know, we're going from an age of ownership into an age of access. So do I really need to own a car if I can access a car when I need it?
Here's one question I want to ask. What about crime? Is there any crime? Have anything? What happens when someone does something bad to someone else? For example, how are if there's a conflict? How is that resolved within your community?
So, Dominoor is a 40-year-old community. So we've gone through many processes in terms of creating structures that will be functional. Mm-hmm. Often we're a laboratory for social and experimental research. So one of the things that's come out of that is what we call our College of Justice. Hmm. So if I'm creating a business agreement with someone, that agreement will be written and it will be filed in our College of Justice. Hmm. And rather than using external legal processes, we'll process any kind of dispute within the context of the community. And everyone mutually agrees to take on the rulings of the College of Justice, which is elected by the people. So there's a very evolved judicial system in place within the context of the community.
Interesting. So I'm curious about that because have you known of disputes and how they and they have they been amicably resolved through this College of Justice?
Yes. I mean, yes, there are. I mean, Dominoor is a microcosm of humanity, so there are, of course, disputes that come up. But there's also within our community, we have a constitution. Oh. And one of the edicts of the constitution is that we always look at the others in our community as brothers or sisters. And we're always willing to give the others a second chance. So when something comes up, you know, there may be a dispute. It will be amicably resolved within the context of our judicial system. And then, you know, the work is to not create acrimony continually after a dispute, but to really look at the other as someone who's you know, your fratello, your brother or your sister, and be willing to give them a second chance. So that's, you know, that's part of the spiritual path of living in a community like this.
Mm-hmm. Of course, the United States, in the United States, the legal system there is based upon the adversary method, which splits relationships and severs relationships, even in family matters. And it creates a society which is often in many ways not in harmony at all. And so that's good to know.
We also have another method of solving disputes. Our founder, this was one of his ways of solving disputes. Our founder was a man by the name of Oberto Araudi. And in our community, we take on plant and animal names. His animal name was Falco. Tarasico is his plant name, which is the dandelion. And Falco, when there was a dispute, would often have the two people who were in dispute go out and drink as much beer as they could. And then he would lock them in a room with no bathroom. And they had the amount of time that it would take them to need to get out of there to use the bathroom to solve their dispute. And he found that to be a very effective way of solving disputes.
Oh, isn't that funny? That's amazing. That's amazing. Is he still alive?
No, unfortunately, Falco transitioned 3 years ago. So we are a community now that's in transition. So certain structures are changing.
Interesting. Now, something you mentioned earlier to me off air, Betsy, was that every full moon you have what's called a full oracle. Is that right? Could you explain that, please, and how it works?
Yes. So we have a group of women and actually women and men in what we call the Way of the Oracle. So the Way of the Oracle it's a spiritual path within Dominoor. And these are people who are working with what we call oracular forces. So if you were to think of Delphi or other famous oracles, those oracles, we don't view those as an individual or a person. But there are people who are able to tap in to this oracular energy. So if we were to look at existence as a book, we might say that the oracular energy is on the spine or the edges of the book. So that energy could be accessed without a limitation of time. So each full moon, we have a ritual called the Full Moon Oracle. And people who have personal questions or business questions are able to submit those questions to this group of priestesses who are working in the way of the oracle. And over the course of the month, they'll work with oracular forces to elaborate answers to those questions. These are not fortune cookie answers. And then each full moon oracle, there's a ritual ceremony that goes on, and those answers are delivered ritually. Also, each month, there's an answer that or information that's given to the community at large. And it's a very, very beautiful ritual ceremony. There are sacred dancers. We have an amphitheater that was built by Dominorians. So it's really a very particular ritual in which also the participants, if they're sensitive or open, also have the opportunity then to tap into these oracular forces during that ritual.
That sounds just fascinating. Years ago, I was in Greece, actually, and I visited the Oracle Delphi, which during ancient times was a place where the rulers of Greece would come to and they'd ask questions of this oracle, which was almost always right, from my memory. But could you give me an example of, for example, a question that was asked recently and what kind of answer was given?
Oh, gosh. The answers are very elaborate. So I can remember a point where there was a project around, for example, the education that was happening in Dominor. Mm-hmm. And what came back was a 5-page elaboration about how aspects of the education could successfully be structured. Mm-hmm. That initial answer, as they began to work with that answer, because we also say that when you ask a question of the oracle, you're putting that into the field in a way that begins to bring synchronicity into that project. So often questions will be asked as a way of opening to synchronicity. That particular answer, as they began to work with those answers, more questions came up. And so then they were able to, many months later, ask the way of the oracle for an elaboration, which then took those answers and further elaborated them. So, I mean, these are really, really very potentially complex and intricate answers that come back.
Well, if you don't mind for my listeners, I know people will be asking, could you give me like a summary of an answer?
To be honest with you, I can't because I've not personally asked a question. Oh. So it would be easier for me had I asked a question to be able to summarize that for you. So I'm sorry I can't be more elucidating on that.
That's all right. I am a psychic myself, and so going to one of these full moon oracles would be just fascinating for me. I don't know if I can change my tickets or not, but I would like to go if possible. but I have to ask you, I have to tell you this too, that I am in touch. I have been in touch with Nostradamus on the other side. And he said, very interesting thing that he said about this time in human evolution is that currently, like, for example, in the United States and many other countries, leaders are chosen through voting, for example, and they're often chosen by, you know, who can promise the most chickens in every pot or the most benefits to everybody. They're not necessarily chosen for their spiritual qualities, but he has said that in the future, leaders of communities will be chosen actually on their spiritual qualities, not necessarily on their political abilities. Is there a council for your Damahur community, and are they chosen on spiritual qualities rather than political abilities?
Dominor has a social structure, as I said, that's emerged and dynamically changed over the years. When Falco realized that he was going to be transitioning, he, in fact, created what we call the sages, the Saji. So now there are two circles of Saji. So those are three people each. So the Saji within Dominor are responsible for the spiritual trajectory of the community. And then we also elect what we call guides. So queen or king guides. Again, this is part of our play to label them king or queen. At this stage, we actually are working with three guides. And dynamically, how they work shifted over the past 2 years. So in the past, the guides have always been responsible for the economic and social trajectory of the community. And in the most recent elections, we actually determined that they would be responsible for sectors. So now we have a guide who's responsible for all of the concerns that are outwardly facing Indominor, whether that's our PR, the media that's coming in. And then we have a second guide who's actually responsible for all the social aspects within Indominor. So whether that's how the nucleos are functioning, or sometimes we have big movements of people between nucleos. And then the third guide is responsible for the economy and the economic aspects of the community. As we've grown, it's become more and more difficult for two people, as we've done in the past, to really be the guidance for such a large community. So, you know, we're dynamic. We're, again, a laboratory for social research. So when something stops working, we find ways to change it. And that's the process that we're going in now in terms of changes in leadership structure.
I'm very curious. These guides, are they people, men and women, who have, for example, strong intuitive abilities or psychic abilities to contact the other side, much like your full moon oracles?
We have many, many systems of divination in Indominor. And whoever the guides are, some of the guides may be more psychically sensitive than others, but whoever the guides are, they're utilizing all of the tools within the community. So we have individuals who are more sensitive in these areas who they may turn to for information. Certainly every office of the king guides, queen guides, always has a tarot deck that was designed by our founder. So, you know, we'll often check in on specific questions to see what insight, but that's just one. I think there are about 36 different types of divination systems that are utilized within Indominor.
A lot of people criticize the politics in the United States, and they leave us with presidential candidates who many people believe have a lot to be desired. Do you think such a divination system could help the U.S. and other countries?
I think that there has to be a level of conscious development that goes on before these divination tools are accessible. When we look at what's happening in the United States on a political level, I believe that there are archetypes being expressed right now. So it's not just about the personalities, but we have worldviews that are coming into conflict right now, and those are rising up in individuals who are archetypically expressing worldviews that are in conflict. Unfortunately, that leads to a leadership model, which I'm, you know, we have chosen not to live in the States at this stage of our lives.
Well, personally, I think that that our future is very, very bright for humanity, and I know I'm confident that we will all make the right choices to make this planet a better place. But I also know if we don't do anything, we could be in a real mess, because the planet's in a mess. There's a lot of pollution. Fukushima's still going on. But that's why I'm intrigued by your community at Damohur and how those lessons can be applied basically worldwide to make this planet a better place. Do you, in your schooling system for children there and in your community, do you teach the kids that Mother Earth is a sacred entity to be respected, the planet and the environment is to be respected and cared for?
Of course we do. But also, I would say to you, you know, we're labeled as an eco-community. It's not that the founders of the community set out to create an eco-community. But the founders and all of those who've then come into the community and have lived by our Constitution are working to live in a way that recognizes diversity, recognizes the planet. It's in our spiritual path, we've become an eco-community as a side effect, not as an objective. And I believe if we're living in a compassionate and connected way, then that becomes one of the results. Without it being an objective, it simply is.
Beautiful. Well, you're fascinating, and I really appreciate you telling me about your life there. I had heard of Damohur before, but I knew nothing about it, frankly, before I came to Italy. Now, you said do you have children, or do they live with you there at the community?
Yes, I have a 14-year-old, so we actually moved as she was entering the second grade. She went from being in a Steiner, Waldorf school in the United States, so came into a school where no one spoke a word of English, which was very difficult. It was a very difficult transition. Our daughter just finished the eighth grade, which is the last year of school in Indominor, and will be going to high school next year. And after going through a difficult initial transition, she, in fact, had a perfect 10 on her Italian state exams. So I think it's been really a successful transition for her, and she's quite a remarkable young lady now.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. And do you have family back in the U.S. as well? And what do they think of your where you're living now?
Well, both my husband and I are orphans, so we've both lost our parents. My brother, in fact, had immigrated to Canada. So we don't have a lot of family left back in the States. My husband's sister is in London. So there's not really been opinion about our decision to leave the States. Mm-hmm. And our friends in L.A., at one point, I have a friend who said to me, "You know, Betsy, you are the person I've known in my life who is the most capable of manifesting what it is you need and want." And the first time I came to the community, I first heard the word Dominor and arrived there 4 days later. The calling was that strong. And after making the reservations and booked for our daughter and I to go together, I had second thoughts. I thought, you know, my gosh, I don't know what this is. This could be a cult. What am I getting myself into? Mm-hmm. And my friend said to me, "You know, you have been putting out that you're looking for this, and now it's appeared, and you just need to go there with an open heart," which is how we approached it. And when we first arrived in Dominor, it was very clear to me that there was something profound going on in this community, and it was also absolutely impenetrable. And so I decided after 3 days that we would leave and move on to another part of Italy that we knew. And before I had told anyone, others in the community started coming to me and saying, "We heard you're leaving. Are you leaving?" I hadn't said anything, but in a collective that's working with this power of intention, a paratelepathic field builds, and people sensed that we were deciding to leave. Mm-hmm. And then I started to see people that I recognized. And I went through the process of, you know, "Have you ever lived in New York? Have you ever lived in Los Angeles, London?" And some of these people were Italian. They'd never been out of this river valley. And then it suddenly occurred to me, these were people that had been in my dream world for the past 30 years. Mm-hmm. And so when I realized that, it was too compelling to leave. And I visited again the next month and the next month, and we moved there 9 months later.
Well, that's wonderful. You know, as you know, in the United States, we spend approximately one-third of our GDP on the military. We also, our crime rate is among the highest in the developed world. Our healthcare system is about 29th or 30th in the world. Our educational system has fallen in the recent years, especially under the leadership of President Obama and his Common Core. And what I was wondering to ask you about is, what about the crime rate in Dominor? Is there any crime at all? But what I was asking that is because I take it from what you're saying is that people are taught to respect each other and the planet, so there's no reason for crime, and they know what to do and how to act.
No, I'm sorry I didn't answer that question. No, there isn't crime in Dominor. You know, there can occasionally be robbery, but it's happening usually with, you know, Italy is going through an economic collapse right now. Mm-hmm. And so as people become more and more disenfranchised, they will often help themselves to the belongings of others. Mm-hmm. But there's not internal crime within the community, no.
Beautiful. Well, I know that probably people worldwide would love to create a community where people respect each other, respect the planet, where there's no crime. And I think that we inherently, that it is our nature to be benevolent, kind, loving, and respectful of each other. And I can see people in the future living together in harmony, like in Dominor.
You know, we often speak about archetypes that have been lost. And I think one of the primary archetypes that as humanity we've lost is the archetype of collectivity, the archetype of living together. We're social creatures, and we thrive when we're in a harmonious and resonant group. One thing that we often don't speak about, but in community, often we don't speak about in community, is also this aspect of people are healed when they come into community and are held within a collective in a compassionate and loving way. I think we all on the planet could benefit from that.
One thing, too, I'd love to ask you about is the healthcare system. Let's say someone, for example, has cancer or an illness. How is that treated? Is it treated spiritually? How do they treat illnesses on the in your community?
Yes, we would say this and. So if someone, and this has happened many times, people have been critically ill, we have an integrated healthcare system. So we have allopathic physicians who are working within our community, but they're also working with an awareness, a larger spiritual awareness. So we also within our community have very specific modalities of treatment that are particular to our community. One of those areas is an area of technology called Celtic technology. And Celtic technology is utilized for many, many different purposes. But the area that it's been most elaborated in has been in our healthcare system. So we have often in the past had patients who have really terminal or serious illnesses referred to us at a point when the medical establishment can no longer offer them palliative care, and have seen remarkable lengthening of life and quality life after utilizing some of the integrated systems that we have. But there are, I always say, I have a system of healers who put me back together when I'm in trouble. Mm-hmm. And really working with a diversity of modality of treatment, some of which are very particular to our community and have been developed within the community. And these are all treatments that are certainly available for study and available for others outside of the community to access. We have one of the best physiotherapy practices in Italy. You know, you'll often see a 7-foot tall guy getting out of a big car headed down to the physiotherapy lab. You know, we have some world famous people who come here to be treated in our physiotherapy lab. So essentially any modality of healing that you might want to access, you could probably find within the confines of our community. And then that doesn't preclude if there's a serious or traumatic illness that we still also use the local hospitals. But we also have our own doctors within the community.
Have you heard of an Italian doctor named Dr. Simoncini? I'm sure you have.
No, I haven't. No.
Well, it's interesting. I'll put you in touch with him if you like. He's famous for using baking soda to get rid of cancer. When he uses it, it's about 80% effective. And his theory is that cancer actually thrives in a acidic environment. And so when you change the pH level in a person's body from acidic to alkaline, and you do it through baking soda, which is dirt cheap. I mean, for a big box of it in the U.S., you pay about $2.50. And that lasts you for at least 6 months. You change the pH level in a person's body, which creates an inhospitable environment for cancer cells, and they all die off. He's been very successful in that, and I'm just curious if you incorporate his techniques or heard of him in your medical treatments.
I haven't heard of his techniques, but you're here in Bagno di Luca with us, and we have, over the past week, been here also at another conference where Dr. Biava, who is a colleague of Irvin Laszlo, who's been sponsoring the event that we've been at, and Dr. Biava has developed what's marketed as a food supplement that actually utilizes a very interesting process of what he discovered was that when an egg is formed, a percentage of that goes to the creation of the embryo, and the remaining material becomes a defense mechanism to defend that embryo. And on the 9th day of the egg formation, those cells are at their most potent, their stem cell cells, mm-hmm. Are at the most potent. And he's created a remedy that actually targets the cancer cell and changes the information within the cancer cell to stop its replication, and if it's too far damaged, to destroy it. So we've seen very, very promising treatment for cancer represented at this conference.
Oh, that's fascinating. Actually, I was talking to your friend Joe, who helped organize the conference, St. Clair, and he told me about Dr. Biava, and I'm planning on interviewing him as soon as possible after this conference.
I would highly recommend that, because I believe Dr. Biava has in fact has unlocked a key for how we can treat with what he would call informational medicine.
Of course, in the United States, chemotherapy and surgery used to treat cancer is only 3% effective. In other words, it's 97% ineffective. And there's many treatments out there that are far more effective. And I want to thank you so much for sharing that. Dr. Biava, Joe told me he does have a book called Cancer and the Search for Lost Meaning. And for those interested, I'm sure you can get it on Amazon.
Right. And Dr. Biava would be the first to say that if he has a patient who's suffering from an illness that can be treated with chemotherapy, and there are certain illnesses that there is a success rate with chemotherapy, he would first recommend the patient to do that. But then his food supplement is in no way counteractive to that. But his work has been very rigorous in the study and the testing that he's done.
I want to share this little story with you, if I may. Years ago, I was in Egypt, and I was down in the lower part of the Nile. There in Luxor, they have hieroglyphs. And the local guide, when I was there, explained to me that 5,000 years ago, Egyptian doctors thought that diseases were diseases. They would split the word into two infinitives, meaning that every disease had a dis-ease, a spiritual component. Mm-hmm. So the Egyptian doctors back then, for example, would first treat the spiritual problem for a person and before they would actually treat the physical part of the illness. They said that the spiritual problems for a person's physical problem would lie in the higher dimensions, the fifth and higher dimensions. So if you treated that, if you corrected that, then their problem in the third dimension should heal itself.
Right. And in fact, many of our healers work with those same principles. And in fact, in Dominor, we have an open university. And in the open university, we have courses that range from half days to 3-year programs. And one of our 3-year programs is the School for Spiritual Healers. And that school is actually teaching many of those methods that you were, illuminating from those ancient times.
One of the things that I learned last year, I had a gentleman named Ray Chandran, a famous spiritual healer from Japan. I sponsored his visit to the Seattle area last July, and he taught me that in ancient Egypt, the doctors there would use golden light as a way of healing people. And let's say, for example, a person wasn't feeling well or they had a physical problem, he would recommend that they visualize golden light around that particular part of the body that was not feeling well or whatever, and that would actually heal, because golden light is God's healing light that would come in from the fifth dimension to heal people in the third dimension.
That's interesting. We have had healers in the past who have worked with light forms. And again, it's been depending on the healer and what they're bringing in, that modality would be in the community. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned ancient Egypt, and in fact, the Celtic technology that I spoke about before mm-hmm. has been in use on the planet in past. And the last time it was in use on the planet was in ancient Egypt.
My goodness, that's incredible. Thank you so much for sharing that. We've got about 5 or 10 minutes left, and I was wondering, are there any particular areas you'd like to talk about before we, for the last part of your interview?
Well, I would really be appreciative of the opportunity to share the work that I do in Dominor. Over many years, I was the director of integrated media strategy for the community as we worked on a way of communicating some of the technologies and stories that we have in the community. And in that work, working with our esoteric archive, I discovered what I found to be the most cohesive, comprehensive mythology of humanity that I had seen reflected in the Western world. So my work has become a mission to bring this story of humanity. And it's not a story of any single peoples or culture or religion or national system. It's really a story that represents global consciousness. Mm-hmm. And we work out of an institute called the Institute for the Mythology of Humanity. And part of what's brought us here to this conference with many scientists and cosmologists, yes, and our readers can actually find the Institute on Facebook, the Institute for the Mythology of Humanity, or at the Institute for the Mythology of Humanity.com. And there you'll be able to see our work. But in this history, which is not linear, so it doesn't look at time in the way we've come to think of time. And I've had the pleasure of sharing this work with such luminaries as Jean Houston. And Jean, in looking at this work, said that this might well be the mythology that Joseph Campbell had predicted would emerge at some point in the future. And she had suggested to me that I begin to meet with cosmologists, physicists, people who are in the sciences who are working really on the leading edge of physics, because everything that I had illuminated for her in this mythology was being supported by the current advances in the world of the quantum physicist. So I appreciate the opportunity to just put that out there.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. A school for spiritual healing. Well, I know many of my listeners around the world would be interested in learning more about that. And you said the website again is what again, to make sure?
So for my work, the website is the Institute for the Institute for the Mythology of Humanity.com. I would suggest you find us on Facebook first, and the links are there. And then Dominor's website is Dominor, DAMANHUR.org. Our website is in 9 languages. So for your English-speaking listeners, you'll find our English-language website. Mm-hmm. But if you have friends who are in other parts of the world, you're also welcome to share the website, and most people can find it in their own language. Mm-hmm. And there you can also find the links to our university, the course schedule, and also all of the opportunities that exist for coming to visit Dominor. And there are programs that range from half-day visits of our temples. And we didn't speak about this, but Dominor is probably most famous in the world for our creation of an underground temple, which has been called the Eighth Wonder of the World. And this is not a temple that's dedicated to any religion, but this is really a temple that's dedicated to the story of humanity. And you'll find, for example, in our temple, a labyrinth that has stained glass windows that are dedicated to what we would identify as an ecosystem of divinity. So there are stained glass windows with essentially the representations of the divine containers that have been dedicated to different people throughout the history of humanity.
Like, for example?
You might see the one window that doesn't represent a face of a divine figure is the window that's dedicated to Judaism. And so in that window, you'll see the technologies, the tools of Judaism that are represented within the stained glass window.
Would you have windows dedicated, for example, to people like Professor Albert Einstein or Michel de Nostradamus or Leonardo da Vinci?
They would not be represented as divine containers. They would be represented in another part of the temple where we actually look at different technologies.
Well, that's fascinating. We've got about 5 minutes left. I'd love for you, I want to give you the floor to talk about anything else you'd like, Betsy.
Oh, gosh. it's easier when you ask me questions, Ted. But I think that I feel that we are at a time as humanity, as a collective, where we're facing both some of the biggest obstacles that we've faced, but also some of the biggest opportunities. And the work that we do in our communities and the work that I do with other people who are working on the frontiers of human consciousness is really around this idea of reawakening each of us to our human potential. And I really feel that at this point we're facing a shift. And we're facing a shift that I think if we can all listen to our inner voices, we'll begin to find that we contain the tools within to understand how we can be contributory into this shift that we're facing. So that would be my invitation. If any of your listeners find any of what I've spoken about of resonance, you can certainly through our website in Dominor find links and deeper information about this. But then also I'm always, I'm Betsy Poole, and I'm on Facebook, and you can also reach me directly there. And I'm happy to point you in the direction of some of these things that we've spoken about.
What would you recommend people do? I always get this question on. People ask me, how can they make this planet a better place? How would you answer that?
I think, you know, what we've certainly also what we've heard over the past 2 days here is really this this question of going within. There are wonderful teachers on the outside, but ultimately each of us has that divine spark within us. And ultimately we are our own teachers on this journey. So I think that if we connect from that point, when we then realize that we're really not separate beings, we're part of a bigger intelligence, and our bigger intelligence that's exploring itself, and recognizing that connection, we couldn't possibly treat others or our planet badly when we're living in the space of it's not really separate from us.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the most important lessons from this conference this week is that we are, in fact, all one.
Indeed. And we've seen that actually proposed from the material sciences down to some of the spiritual practitioners who've been presenting here. So I think that's been it's been very heartening to see the transition now also that the sciences are undergoing, where material science is beginning to realize that without taking consciousness into consideration, we reach limits in terms of what we're able to explore with the material sciences. Mm-hmm. I would also refer your listeners. We have a YouTube series called Confessions of a Time Monk. And on that series, we sit down with some of the world's really, really pioneers on the frontiers of human consciousness. And we look at this shift that we're in and understand from their areas of research and stories, you know, where we are in the shift.
Mm-hmm. What do you look at the future? How do you look at the future of humanity?
Well, I'm an optimist, but I also see us with two paths that are emerging right now, and I believe that we're in a very, very, very critical moment where there's an imperative for us to really step out of our individual stories and step into a collective story where we're moving forward into this future as a collective, not as individuals. I think that's, you know, that's the transition that we're in right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, Betsy, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to allow me to interview you today. You had some beautiful, really beautiful, important messages.
I appreciate your coming up here up on the hill in Banja de Luka, and I would apologize to your listeners for the cacophony in the background, but we're really in a very beautiful place, and I'm sorry you're not seeing it visually, but Ted, it's been really a pleasure to sit down with you.
Well, thank you, Betsy. I know a lot of people will be asking questions about your community. Again, the website is www.DAMNHUR.org. And you will also available on Facebook. And again, you're available on Facebook as well under Betsy Poole, P-O-O-L. Well, thank you so much, Betsy, for coming on today. I really appreciated your words of wisdom.
Thank you, Ted, and look forward to hopefully inviting you and hosting you in our community soon.
Thank you. I'd love to come sometime. This is Ted Marr with Out of This World Radio, broadcasting on a really beautiful, sunny, warm summer day here in Banja de Luka in northern Italy, and I hope you've enjoyed this interview. Thank you so much.
Hello, friends. I hope you enjoyed that interview. That was an incredible experience interviewing her. She's from Italy. And it's a possible blueprint for sustainable communities in the future. I wanted to mention to everyone that I didn't have a chance to mention this before, but from October 18th to November 5th, 2016, I'm sponsoring a U.S. and Canadian West Coast tour by Michiko Hayashi of the Emoto Peace Project. She'll be starting in Los Angeles, going up to San Francisco, then Portland, Seattle, Tacoma, Olympia, Tokland, and ending in Vancouver on Messages from Water and the wonderful work of Dr. Masaru Emoto. The other thing I wanted to tell you, for more information about her work, please see her website at www.emotopeaceproject.net.
On October 23rd, 2016, she'll be giving a very special presentation at Stewart Hot Springs next to Mount Shasta. Proceeds from her talk will benefit the wonderful Moto Peace Project, which helps children around the world understand love and gratitude and to create a much better and happier planet. Part of the proceeds as well is help the children of Fukushima. And for registration or information about any of these events, please call me on my cell here in the United States at 509-750-9793 or 1-888-879-8339, which is toll-free in the United States and Canada. Or you can email me as well at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Also, next month, we have a very, very special surprise. Michiko will be putting an article on the Modal Peace Project and Messages from Water in the upcoming edition of the wonderful Natural Choice Directory, which is available here in the Puget Sound area, which will be coming out next month in September 2016. The directory is free, and you can go to www.naturalchoice.net. It's available at 795 locations around Puget Sound, including PCC, Marlene's, and East West Books. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend, and I can't wait to talk to you again next Friday. I hope you have a beautiful, a really beautiful weekend. Take care, everyone, for a better planet. Bye-bye.